Thank you for subscribing to InvestTalk. We'll begin in just a moment. KPP Financial Senior Vice President Justin Klein explains why a registered investment advisor firm wants to talk about real estate.
Your home is an important piece of your total financial picture. You need to make sure that when you do retire, you have a plan to maybe relocate, downsize if need be.
Contact Justin directly with a note on investtalk.com. Just select Contact Justin or call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. Now, InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday edition of InvestTalk. And we're here, I'm here always to answer questions that we hope we can help you with. You know, today managing money is more than just about investing decisions. So just as we try to help our clients with their whole financial lives, we try to help you any way we can on this program. At least that's my goal. So I try to offer some perspective and step back and take a look at the bigger picture and help you look at it, help you see it. And, you know, of course, we're in a time right now where there's a lot of global economic uncertainty. Here in the United States, our economic situation is much more stable than the rest of the world. Almost all major economies in the world are trying to slow down. They're intervening in their economy. The governments are intervening. Okay? China, Europe have been making headlines over the past few months, which, you know, has really increased volatility of stocks. And with bond yields at near record lows in almost all the biggest economies around the world, bond yields are very, very low everywhere. So that makes dividend-paying stocks more attractive. However, as we talked about yesterday, there's things you got to be careful of. You got to be aware of. There's dangers in those. I like dividend-paying stocks. We have a program that's focused on that. But there's ways to make sure that dividend is secure. You know, and I'm worried that everybody's chasing those high dividends and they don't understand that there's a lot of risk involved there. And then I always bring this back to how much risk should you take? How much risk is too much risk for you specifically? And how do you measure that? Well, it's really important for you to know that. And of course, I can help you with that. First, we want to learn how much risk is in that you're really comfortable with. What is the level of risk that you can tolerate and not worry about it so much? And then, what is the level of the risk of your portfolio? So there's two parts. One, a personal thing of how much risk you want and you feel comfortable with. And two, does that match with the portfolio I have? And of course, we have free software to help us with that, help you, help us. And, you know, I'm not trying to pretend that, you know, we don't use this as help us market ourselves, but it is also free for everybody out there. It's just what you do is you go to our website, investtalk.com. On the front page, there's what's called a risk analysis tool. And what you do is you click on that. It's going to ask you a series of questions, and it's going to give you a score. It's going to give you a number between 0 and 100, and that is going to be your risk number. And just so you know, the risk number for the S&P 500 is 80. So anything below that, you're less risky than the market. Anything above that, you're more risky. Now, I then, on my side of this same piece of software, can put your portfolio in. Exactly what you own. How much of everything. I need your statement to do that. And I'll put it in. And the same software will score your portfolio about risk. I think it's a pretty neat tool. If you really want to know how much risk you're willing to take and how much risk you are taking, this is the way to go about it. And it's all free. I do this for free. And, you know, there's no obligation. I don't try to talk you into anything. I mean, we would love to manage your money. That's what we do for a living. And I have different portfolios to match different risk tolerances. But it's a free tool. Has also a retirement we call it a retirement map that's built into that system. There's all kinds of other things that are built into it too. A lot of them are clients, you know, we do for our clients. Now, do you have a question about risk or maybe different kinds of risk? Give me a call. Love to talk to you. What money matter do you want to talk about? Let's hear from you at 888-99-CHART.
I had a question. I currently have a new job, and they do not offer a 401k. And I haven't started my retirement yet. I'm 35. Now, I'm debating on whether I should go Roth IRA or a traditional IRA. I totally understand the traditional IRA, but as for the Roth IRA, I'm not sure. Does one outweigh the other, or would it matter? I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, that's a very good question. What's a regular IRA or a traditional IRA versus a Roth IRA? It's all about different treatments of taxes, basically. A Roth IRA, on the money you put in it, the money you put in a Roth is after taxes. You pay taxes on it. So when you put that money in a Roth, and over the years it grows, when you start taking it out, you never, ever have to pay another tax on that money, income tax. So it gets to grow it tax-free. You get to grow it. So the longer you grow it, the better it looks. So the younger you are, the better the Roth probably is. Okay, a regular IRA, traditional IRA, you don't have to pay taxes on the money you put in. You get to reduce whatever you put in, up the limit, of course. You get to reduce that for that year against your adjusted gross income. So you don't have to pay taxes on it, income taxes on it. But all the growth, when you start taking it out, you're going to have to pay taxes on everything you pay take out. The idea is you'll be at a lesser tax rate because you'll be retired, you'll make less money. And on a traditional IRA, you're forced to start taking the money out when you're 70 and a half. Where a Roth IRA, you never are forced to take the money out. You can see why. The government wants its taxes. So which one is better? Well, you're 35. I probably lean toward the Roth IRA. That's what I would. I'd do the Roth. If you're 55, I'd probably lean toward the regular IRA because you're probably at a higher income bracket then too. So we can lower your taxes, pay less taxes, better. It's really a personal choice. But I will say this. I like the Roth IRA better the younger you are. I think that's just kind of obvious to me. Not everybody agrees with me on that, though, just so you know. Investors should be judicious when scoping out certain sectors for opportunities in high-risk bonds, high-yield bonds, or, in other words, junk bonds. When you hear the word high yield, that means junk bond. Junk bonds don't necessarily mean terrible and don't ever do it. High yield and junk. People who sell them like to use the word high yield. People who don't like them like to use the word junk. But it's really, that's going to be our main talking point. How to know when high yield bonds are a good investment. Okay, that's what our main talking point today. I also want to talk about some of the other statistics. There was a lot of statistics released this week. And what is the picture the statistics are painting in our economy? What kind of picture is it painting? So I want to talk about that. What did the ECB do today? It had a big impact, not only on our stocks, but on the currencies. Our dollar, the euro, big impact there. So what did they do? And what will raising the federal funds rate do to the housing market? Because there's always a ripple effect of what the Fed does. Is it going to put a kibosh on our housing market? Those are three things I want to talk about today. But of course, what's on your mind is important, not me. My San Ramon portfolio checkup date is full now, but we'll be announcing another new date for the new year, so don't think I won't. And if you live outside the range of our California office, I allow time to do reviews via Skype or the telephone. I do them all the time. You know, we are registered investment advisors throughout the country, so give me a call. You can schedule a meeting and do that by just going to investtalk.com.
Listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHARTER is our number, 888-992-4278. Cliff in Pacific Beach. How you doing, Cliff?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Most of us are contributing into some sort of retirement account, right?
Yes.
I happen to contribute into the TSP, the U.S. government.
Got it.
I just bumped mine $100 contribution a pay period.
Okay.
My check went down $41.
Your paycheck went, then they matched money for you?
No, negative. It took that much off my taxes.
And
And I'm not a wealthy man. And my daughter happens to work for the government, and so does my son-in-law. So I happen to mention my daughter. She says, well, Daddy, I have the 50-cent rule. Every time you take a dollar out, put it in the TSP, your check only goes down 50 cents. Well, it seems to me that mitigates a lot of the risk.
It does mitigate a lot of risk. And when the way you're doing it, Cliff, with every paycheck, that's called dollar cost averaging.
Absolutely.
As the prices come down, depending on how many years left you have, how old are you?
Older than you, son.
Uh-oh. If you have 5 years, 3 to 5 to 7 years left, you kind of want the market to be a little bit under pressure.
Oh, yeah.
Downward, because you're buying more and more shares. Then, just a year or two before you retire, you want it to shoot up.
Well, I'm on the old system, so I don't particularly care.
Yeah, you're on the pension system?
Yeah, but my daughter, she's in the other...
The 401k type system?
Right.
And or the 403b or whatever they call it these days.
Yeah, and there's great choices to choose from. And but it makes a lot of difference. She makes a very little money, and at 50 cents on a dollar, it sure helps out.
You certainly want to do that. Yep. Cliff, appreciate the call. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's go to Mark in San Bernardino. Hi, Mark. How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you doing, Steve?
Pretty good. I appreciate you calling.
A little while back, you wrote in your weekly newsletter about selling short.
Yes.
And that you said that if you didn't know what a stock being hard to borrow meant, then you shouldn't be selling short.
Right.
So I'm asking you, what does it mean when it's hard to borrow, and how would you find that out on a particular stock?
Okay, good question. Let's talk about what is shorting for people out there. Of course, shorting is where you borrow somebody else's stock and you sell it at today's high price, at least you're hoping today's high price. And then, since you borrowed it, you have to give it back someday. And the idea is that the stock price will go down and you give it back. For you to borrow somebody else's stock to sell it, that means that there has to be enough stock out there in the float that's on a margin account with other people's stocks, and their stocks are a margin account, meaning they'll allow it to be borrowed. It means that there's got to be enough out there for you to borrow. Sometimes there's not enough, okay? They're not allowing it to be borrowed, and it could be any stock out there. Most of the time, the big stocks are easy to borrow, but it could be any stock out there. And many times, if it depends on your trading platform that you're using, are you using like E-Trade or...
I'm using E-Trade.
I'm not sure about E-Trade, but many of these trading platforms will put a little HB behind the little symbol when you try to sell something short. And HB means hard to borrow.
Okay.
That means it's not a very liquid stock. And when you want to get out, in other words, you want to buy it back, it could be a problem because there's not much in the float out there.
Right.
So you could drive your price up, and there's too many people shorting that same stock. Remember, shorting a stock is supportive of the price because everybody's got to buy it back again someday.
Right.
So try to stay away from the hard-to-borrow stocks. Then you won't have any trouble getting out when the time is to get out.
Okay. And that'll just be indicated
many
when
times
you actually try to enter the order or when... Or
it's usually when you first put the order in. You know what you do is you got to call E-Trade and say, how do I know and where does it show up and how can I find that out?
Right.
But most
right.
platforms tell you.
Okay. Great.
Thanks
very
Mark.
Much.
Our Invest Talk Anytime number is 888-99-CHART. I want to hear your questions. I really do. Any money questions. Any. 888-99-CHART. If I can't answer the question, I will say so. I try not to pretend to be somebody who I'm not. So I do have a lot of data in front of me, but I don't have all the data in the world. So give me a call. We'll get to you next on the phone after this break.
Here's another benefit when you sign up for our InvestTalk Insider program, a brief list of real estate investment trusts, REITs, that should be on investors' radar if they're looking for exposure to this dividend-focused sector. You can sign up for this free InvestTalk Insider program on investtalk.com. You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-992-4278. Let's talk to Parrish in Little Rock, Arkansas. How you doing there, Parrish?
Pretty good, sir. I got a question for you. If the Fed raises the rates end of the year, how will that affect REITs short-term and long-term? Will it affect them negatively or take the price down, or how will that
When you say rates, are you talking about interest rates at the bank, savings rates, or are you talking about CD rates or mortgage rates?
Mortgage rates.
Okay, well, it's going to be one of my talking points is what will raising the rates do to the housing market, and that's part of what I was going to talk about, but I'll talk about it right now. It probably, Parrish, the only rate the federal government has control over, now word, I've used the word control, is the Federal Reserve has control of overnight rates. Okay, I'm simplifying this. So that's the rate that they charge banks to borrow the money from the Federal Reserve. So the bank borrows money from the Federal Reserve, and the bank takes that money and lends it to you and me in the form of mortgages or whatever, right? That's what they do.
Right.
Okay, so the rate right now is like zero. Now it's going to go, if the Fed raises rates, which I'm pretty sure they'll do, can pass that increase along to you by raising the mortgage rates or lending rates if they want to, for businesses or whatever. The question is will they do it? And I'm not convinced they're going to do it. It's going to be very little, Parrish. Why? Because I think they've already raised the rates. They've been kind of eking up the rates. Have you noticed that over the last month or two? Mortgage rates have been kind of creeping up already in anticipation. So I don't think it's going to have that big of an impact. Yeah, it might have a little impact. I don't think it's going to be as much as people fear. I really don't. So
will this affect REITs negatively or positively, or like a REIT in a housing REIT?
In a REIT, it will affect it negatively. But if you notice how bad those REITs have been doing for the last 6 months or so, I think it's already built into the price. The reason why it affects a REIT, real estate investment trust, is because REITs borrow money to buy properties to collect the rents, right? That's what they do. So they borrow money. So the perception is that their cost of borrowing is going to go up. So the profits and the dividends are going to be less. That's probably a misconception at this point because the rates are so low and they're going to be so, it's such a small increase. I think the REITs got beat up unjustly.
Okay. That'll work. And thank you, sir.
Thanks, Parrish. I appreciate the call. I really do. Now, that's my opinion. I could be wrong. There are going to be other opinions on this, but that's my opinion. Okay.
Annuities, asset allocation, reading stock market trends, building a truly balanced portfolio. If it's important to you and you want to know more about it, we're here for you. 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Rich in Castro Valley. How you doing, Rich?
Excellent. Always a great show.
Thank you.
My question is, I always seem to have difficulty in determining, is there a formula for determining a stop loss, either on a stock or an index?
There are many formulas, but there's no one formula that you can apply across the board to every stock. Okay, let me tell you why real quickly, and it's, you know, obviously this has to be brief. I could teach a class on stop losses, okay? Hours upon hours. But let's talk about a company like Johnson & Johnson versus a company pick any small cap company. Johnson & Johnson will move very slowly up and very slowly down, every increments on a daily basis. We're a high growth stock. Tech stock, they can jump up and down hugely. So in one day, so your stop loss will be different for each one of those. You could say, you could say, for instance, I'm going to have a stop loss of 10% from the high. If the stock starts to fall 10% from whatever high, and it keeps going up and up and up, I follow it up with that 10% stop loss. Well, if the stock volatility is 1% a day, that works perfect. If the stock volatility is 10% a day, that won't work at all. Right? So, so to answer your question, Rich, there's no simple formula. One way to do it, is study like the last few weeks, month or two, of the percent move up and down for a particular stock, and then use that as a gauge to where you want to put your percent stop loss. Some people,
so you wouldn't use the VIX as a factor in determining your stop loss?
No, not the VIX. You would not. No. You can use moving averages, you know, 10-day moving average or 20-day moving average, 50-day moving average of your stock. You know, you can, if it drops below that moving average, you're out. You know, there's that kind of, there's that kind of stop. If it breaks below a support level, that's another stop. See, that's what I mean. There's so many other ways to do it, Rich. It's difficult to just say, yeah, here's one good way. No, there isn't.
Yeah, I've tried multiple different ways, and
it's tough.
Tend to pick the bottom more, or the temporary bottom more than a appropriate exit point.
Yeah, it's tough, Rich. It's tough. You got to kind of understand the various stocks and the sector it's in and its own volatility. Appreciate the call. Thank you, Rich. You're listening to Invest Talk. Coming up on the next half hour, shopping for dividends. Don't believe all the promises out there. That's on Invest Talk 101. This is Invest Talk.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-992-4278. We got to get in some talking points here. Thank you for the calls. I really appreciate it. And, of course, you can always call. I mean, that's the number one job here. How to know when high-yield bonds are a good investment. This is a high-yield bond is also known as junk bonds, and this is an area that people have been tracking and following and trying to, you know, trying to invest in because they want the yields. These high yield bonds or junk bonds pay higher yields than regular bonds. And what is that? What is a junk bond? What is a high yield bond? Well, there's three rating agencies that rate bonds issued by corporations: Moody's, Standard & Poor's, and Fitch. Okay, and these, they have different ratings, and the ratings go from AAA down to D. AAA rating on a bond down to D. Well, Moody's BA1 that's the breakoff. So it goes from AAA to AA to single A to triple B. Yeah, on and on and on. Okay, and for S&P, it's BB plus or worse. That's junk bond. BA1 or worse is Moody's junk bond. So you kind of have to know what they call high yield bonds or junk bonds. How do you find them? Now let me warn you about these three rating agencies. They're not always right. Do you remember in the financial crisis, they had high rates for all those CDOs and GMOs, those bonds backed by real estate. And most of those, vast majority of them went bankrupt. And they were highly rated by these same rating agencies. So don't think they're, you know, that's the, okay, I just have to pay attention to them. See, you want to look at the company and its ability. If you're going to reach for high yield bonds, you want to make sure that are they going to be able to pay the bond? That's your whole concern. Do they have the financial strength to pay the bond? JCPenney has junk bond rates. Revlon, the makeup people, they're junk bond rates. Sprint is rated junk. Their bonds are rated junk. Can those companies pay? Will they last long enough so you can pay the yields and get your money back? There's risks. Now, let's talk about that. I'm talking about the bonds themselves. Well, what about a bond fund? Try to remember a bond fund, a bond mutual fund or an ETF does not have a maturity date. And you, if we go, when we move into the next recession, whenever that happens, those junk bonds funds are going to get killed. If interest rates rise sharply, those junk bond funds will probably go down very fast. That's the most volatile part of the bond market. So don't fall in love with that yield when you're looking at junk bonds. Be very careful when you're in that area of the market. Let's go to James in New York. How are you doing, James?
I'm good. How are you tonight, Steve?
I'm good. Thanks for the call.
Yes, I had a question. It's just honestly, it's just a general statement that I was wondering if you might evaluate for me.
Sure.
The following statement, I'll just preface by saying the only one of these that I own is Apple. But the statement is, you need to own Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Facebook. Have that in your portfolio regardless of what they cost, and you'll be thankful in 10 years.
That's a possibility. If you give yourself 10 years, James, yeah, I can see that as a true statement. This is the problems of James. Every one of those you named are really expensive except for Apple.
Correct. So, I own Apple.
Yeah. We own Apple in our managed accounts also. And what's going to happen is I guarantee you every one of those names you just named are going to go down 30, 40, 50%. Over that 10-year period at some point. To go down before they recover.
Okay.
But if you held them for 10 years, and that's what you said, hold them for 10 years, I would agree that they're going to be higher, probably much higher in 10 years. Yes.
With the potential of some splits to happen in shares along the way, most likely?
Of course, yes. There'll be splits, and there'll be several probably splits, yes. Remember, Apple was split, 2 years ago? What was that? A huge split, right?
Yes.
And, Apple is the only one that's cheap relative to the earnings. The others are expensive,
right.
But they're all growing very fast. Yeah.
So would you say that it does not matter how much they are now? If you plan to keep them for 10 years, is price irrelevant at this point?
I would say yes. I would say that. You might get people disagreeing with that, but I wouldn't buy.
Sure.
For me, James, I wouldn't buy them now because I'm gonna wait. I'm gonna wait till they go on sale. At some point, they will. Now, I might be waiting too long, and if they double and then get cut in half, I didn't do myself any good, right? I'll wait for it to go on sale. But I just have a hard time overpaying for stocks. I'm a growth plus value investor. I want some value before I invest. And there's not a lot of value there at some of these high prices. If you take a look at Netflix, Amazon, there's like four or five stocks that really held up the market this year. And those were the ones that were. They're big cap, huge growing, high price, and moving up in price this year. That's not too many. It's only a handful. Okay? Appreciate
Absolutely.
The call.
Thank you.
James, appreciate the call. And that was a very good question. Very good question. If the longer term you are, if you buy good, solid companies, 10 years from now, they'll be higher. Now, there could be several years that they suffer. That could be happening. Yeah. See, so it's a tough question when to buy. You always want to buy when something's on sale if you can. Now, sometimes it doesn't work out. Maybe they'll never go on sale, but my experience tells me that they will at some point. Above Average Investing for the Average Investor, that's the title of my book. It's a no-nonsense beginner's guide for people who are wanting to get into the market and try to understand how it works. What moves stocks? What moves prices? You need to learn. Do you need to learn economics? All that stuff you do, you really kind of do, and that's touched on in my book. But I have a lot of other books listed on our website, the recommended book list on investtalk.com.
InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial. Look at the Select Growth and Income Program. It's made up of hand-picked mutual funds for flexibility, strength, and diversity. To find out more about any of the KPP investment programs, click on the Investments tab on investtalk.com.
Hi, my name is Lori, and I had a question regarding buying stocks. I have a little bit in a 401k, and I've been investing in mutual funds for a while now, about 5 years. 31 years old, and I just don't know how to start buying stocks. If I should just open up a account by through Scottrade, or how I should go about doing it. So if you could answer this question, I'd greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, Scottrade is a good discount brokerage firm, so I have no problem with Scottrade, E-Trade. There's no numerous of them, but Scottrade is good. And how to go about buying stocks? Well, it's so simple to buy them, it's kind of scary. It didn't used to be this simple, but it's so simple at a brokerage firm. You open an account, and you put money in the account. And there's very simple, you know, they'll have very, you know, little tabs at the top of, you know, your account balance, your holdings. And one of the tabs will probably say trading. You click on that and they'll give, there's little boxes. What stock do you want? You want to buy or sell? You know, you click on the buy box. You click on and type in your symbol. What price you and what do you want, a limit order or do you want a market order? There's all these terms. You're going to have to understand what they are when you physically buy a stock. Make sure you understand the terms, okay, what they're asking. And you're going to say, well, I don't know what market order or limit order is. Well, go to investopedia.com, look up the term market order, and you'll get a definition of what that means. Okay. The real question you should ask is, how do I research stocks and how do I manage a portfolio of stocks? Because buying and selling is simple. It's growing a portfolio over time, which is important. But buying and selling, anybody can do that. You know, a five-year-old could do that on the computer. So which stocks are you going to buy? How do you know what price to pay? Those are the tough questions, really tough. 888-99-CHART is our number, everybody. You can reach us. We have lines open, 888-992-4278. Avin in San Ramon, how you doing, Avin?
I got a quick question. I have two kids, 12 and 10. I started putting money for their education.
Okay.
So far, I put in about $22,000. It's hard to gauge as to how much the expenses would be. So on an annual average, what do you think I should be putting in?
Are you putting them in a 529 plan?
Yes, it's a 529 plan by Charles Schwab.
Okay. Is that 529 in California or is it Illinois? Is it?
It's Illinois.
Now, people will probably ask me, how did I know that? Well, yeah. The reason why I know that is each state sponsors a educational called a 529 plan. Each state has its own. And why did I say Illinois? Because I know Illinois has a very good plan.
Yeah.
Therefore, they're selling a lot. California's plan is just okay.
Yeah.
If you live in California, you can buy any state plan you want. You don't necessarily. It's not money that has to be spent in Illinois. You can spend it anywhere in the United States, but it is for college education.
That's true, yeah.
College. Okay. Next question, Avin, you have to ask is your child, are they going to go to Berkeley or Harvard? Or are they going to go to a regular college, you know, like a USC or UCLA?
One of those Cal colleges, either USC, UCLA, or Stanford, Berkeley. One of those things.
Okay, so, okay, yeah. Good. Because, you know, the expenses on the various colleges dramatically change.
Yeah.
Remember, you don't have to come up with all the money for the education. They can get college student loans for some of it. So you're just helping them. You don't have to, you know, if you make a ton of money and you want to, you can.
Yeah.
But you don't have to have all the money for their education. Just think of this way. It's going to cost about $20,000 to $30,000 a year for college.
Okay.
From that number back, and they're 8 to 10 years old?
That's right. 10 and 12. So.
Okay, 10 and 12. Figure then, you know how many years you have. You have 6 to 8 years each.
Yeah.
Okay, and your money will make about 6 to 10% a year. So if you were real generous, you can add 10% to 22,000 compounded.
Oh, okay. So
those are the kinds of numbers you play with.
Okay.
And that means you're going to have, you know, if you're going to have all of it, you've got a lot of work to do. I wouldn't suggest you have to have all of it. You don't. I know my wife's parents pay for the first year, and then you're on your own for the rest of the year. Some pay for the school, but not the room and board, so they had to borrow a student loan. Student loans are so easy to get, Alvin, that you won't have any problem.
That's right. It's been about 3 years since I started, and then I'm adding about anywhere between $2,000 to $3,000 a year for each account.
So, I think that's very, very good. For the average working guy, that's a very good number.
All right. That's good. Thank you.
Thanks, Alvin. Appreciate the call.
Bye-bye.
Did you get your dose of Steve today? Steve Peasley's market commentary can't always put things right in the market, but it can put things into perspective. There for you every morning on InvestTalk.com.
Let's go to Fred in San Diego. How you doing, Fred?
Hi. I would like to know, are there any general guidelines for setting a hedge position? Take a generic one. In other words, what I'm concerned about is how to set those proportions. Would it have anything to do with the proportion of the numeric risk at the time you set it? In other words, for example, if you want to set a hedge for the index of the S&P or the NDX, how would you proportion it?
For everybody else, let's make sure we understand what the hedge means. A hedge, everybody, means that you're in a position and you want to protect it from going down. Most common hedges are they're in a position, you made a lot of money, it's been going up, and you want to hedge it or hedge the whole portfolio against a fall in the market. So that means you put on positions that will go up when everything, it goes in the opposite direction is what it wants to do. So Fred's asking, well, is there rules as to how much of a hedge?
Yes. In other words, how much would you put into going long or short to create that hedge?
Okay.
Would it have anything to do with what you assess the risk, numeric risk at that time would be? In other words, if you assess that the numeric risk is 3 going long and 1 going short, would it have anything to do with that?
There's many ways to hedge. You can hedge with options. And
oh, yeah. Just take a generic, you know, long, short position, which can be done with the ETFs.
Well, let's say you feel that the odds of the market are going up or continuing to go up are very strong. You have to determine that, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Just say you think it's 3-1. In that situation, you wouldn't want to put more than 25% a short position. For instance, let's say you have a portfolio of stocks that you like and you still think they're going to go up, but you're worried about the overall market. You can short the overall market, but still hold on to your positions because some of them still may go up, but even though the market goes down. But how much is that is basically what you think the risk is.
But there's no general guidelines.
No.
No. Okay.
It's all individual and how much risk are you comfortable with.
Okay.
Thanks, Fred. Appreciate the call. As we move into the final segment of the day, we welcome your question about any money matter. InvestTalk is knowledge before you invest in anything. 888-99-CHART is how to reach me. And we'll talk to Daniel in Palo Alto next. And then you.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Let's go to Daniel in Palo Alto. How you doing, Daniel?
Well, pretty good. I wish I'd had a better day and I've gotten stopped out of a couple of things.
Yeah.
Just a quick question about that. If the economic indicators are fairly strong tomorrow, I think investors, you would agree, are going to assume there's definitely going to be an interest rate hike. And is that going to spook people? And should we therefore be hedging, you know, putting in some advanced hedges?
I don't think so, Daniel. I don't. Because I think what you're seeing now is a reaction to the interest rate move. I think that everybody kind of knows and is set and ready for the rate to go up. I think they all know it. We all know it. Don't you know it? Don't I know it? Yeah, we all know it.
Yeah.
So just, we kind of, I think what you're looking at, Daniel, is a lot of volatility because of the worry of that rate. But once it's done, I think the worry is going to stop. Because
if we just hang on, we'll hold our eyes and hold.
Yeah, that, if you're a long-term holder, you just kind of ignore this. But if you're more of a trader, I think you're going to get a rebound. I just don't know how much it's going to be. You know,
yeah.
It will. And I do think it's a tough call, but I think after the Fed meets and they finally tell us that they're raising rates a quarter point, everybody's going to have a big sigh of relief. Oh, thank God. Okay, it's over. Now, of course, they'll start to think about, well, when's the next one coming? But I think the Fed's going to give us signals that it's going to be the data dependent, and we're not going to be in a big hurry to keep raising rates because they're going to spook the housing market. They're going to spook everything. They don't want to do that. They don't want to spook anything.
Or the automobile market's going to suffer, yeah.
Yeah, so they want to spook that either. So they're going to be very careful what they say. And I have a feeling they're going to say stuff like, you know, don't worry about it. We're not going to really raise rates maybe next time or this quarter, but not anytime soon. We're going to have to see. I think that's what they're going to have to say.
I see. Yeah.
So I do think it's built in.
Have they as much said that they're going to do it, or they're just...
Pretty much, yeah. Janet said yesterday in a speech, she said there's no inflation and the market could well withstand a rate increase. That's what she said. She didn't say she's going to raise them. She just said it could withstand it. Well, what is that? Yeah. Everybody took it as, yeah, you're going to raise the rates, you know. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it, Daniel. Okay, let's go to Jerry in Pittsburgh. Hi, Jerry.
Hey, how do you decide, or is it appropriate to, like, if you have my particular 401k, you know, they give you so many large cap, mid cap, whatever, and you stick with the one fund you're in, or do you use the 200-day moving average? When do you decide to get in and out of a fund?
Very good question. How do you decide to invest into your 401k, and when do you move stuff around? Very good questions. About every 6 months, you should probably look at your 401k and make some adjustments based on what you think is going to happen in the market, or call this show. Yeah, that's fine. But how to invest, the smartest and best way to do it, and the easiest way for you to do it, is dollar cost average in. It works over time. Dollar cost average means you invest once a month or every paycheck a certain amount, and you split it up consistently the same way every time. When the market goes down, and in actuality, when you're dollar cost averaging, you would want the market to go down. That doesn't sound right, does it? But you do, because as the market goes down, you're buying more and more shares of the mutual funds that you're going to be in. The market never goes down forever. Never has. Since the Great Depression, it has not gone down forever. So if you bought all the way down during this recent 2000, 2001, 2002, you kept buying and dollar cost averaging in, you would have made a lot of money in 2003, wouldn't have you?
Mine went up.
You would have made up most of the money.
Right.
Because you had more and more shares at lower and lower prices. You were driving your price of the shares down over that period of time. What is the biggest danger for people who dollar cost average is they stop dollar cost averaging when the market goes down, and then they start up again when the market goes up. That means you're paying higher prices, and when you can get it at lower prices, you stop buying it. That makes no sense. So you got to be able to weather the storm of the market, whatever storm that is, and keep doing it.
Okay.
What did the ECB do today? Remember, we had the speech by Janet yesterday, and you had the ECB today, and they extended their QE buyback program another 6 months, and they lowered the benchmark rate, equivalent to the benchmark rate, 0.1%, a tick. So they didn't do it much, and that made the dollar fall and the euro jump up. If you want to know why, give me a call and ask tomorrow. Hour's up. Remember, you can hear our show streaming on your station's website, you know, if you want, investtalk.com. You can see it there. Or you can download it on our TuneIn app if you want to be a podcaster. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. And for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial, I thank you for listening today and hope you will return tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.